Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. And this episode is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game, the home of the best fantasy football games. Also a place where you can read a lot of quality articles on Serie A from writers such as John Solano, Chloe Beresford, Enrico Passarella, all frequent guests on the podcast, as well as yours truly. Yesterday, I wrote a column grading the transfer window in Serie A, which we'll cover a little bit on the podcast today. So, of course, we had our first set of games in Serie A over the weekend. We're going to get back to naming our winners and losers of the Serie A weekend. We're going to give some grades for the transfer window and answer some of your Twitter questions. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our great friend, producer, co-host Alex Goldberg, continues to blow up on Twitter since last week's gone up over another 1,000 followers. So I want to welcome all those that are tuning in to Calcio Land after watching Alex's brilliant videos. It's great to have you on board. So Alex, we recorded our last podcast on Thursday, and then on Friday morning, kind of a surprising announcement came out of the blue. On the last day of the transfer window, the day before the season kicked off, Juve released Marchisio of his contract. So I almost was tempted to do an emergency podcast on that, but I decided let everything digest a little bit. So let me ask you, what was your reaction to that?
Yeah, it's funny. I almost had my reaction pre-recorded because if you think back to last season, as things were starting to dwindle in the season, Marchisio was hampered by so many injuries, you were kind of getting ready for him to depart from Juve. But then the summer continued and he was still on Juventus, and all of a sudden, all the talk about maybe midfield being their weakest spot, maybe you started to think, all right, Marchisio is going to be there for another year. So it was a surprise, as you said, him leaving Juve on Friday, them terminating his contract. However, I still had kind of been emotionally prepared for his exit. We kind of saw this coming, but to take a step back from everything, what a career. What a career. I think if you look up, if this did exist in the dictionary, David, if you look up a Juventus player in the dictionary, you see Marchisio. I'm 29 years old. Marchisio is 32 years old. Marchisio has technically been on Juventus for 25 years, if you consider him at youth level. That is astonishing. And in a day and age where in every sport, in every country, it is so rare where you have a, quote, one club man. You barely have it in American sports these days. People know Dirk Nowitzki for the Mavericks. He's like the only one really these days. Maybe Tom Brady. But Marchisio, he'll probably go to another team and continue his career. But I'm counting him as a one club man. I really am. He had such love for Juventus and vice versa. Just such a complete professional. I think to players like Paul Pogba, who obviously was inserted at a young age in a very, very impressive Juventus side. And I guarantee you, you ask Pogba, and I know he's spoken about it, but Marchisio, someone like Marchisio was crucial, absolutely crucial for his maturing process. And even Paulo Dybala, who came at a pretty young age as well. Marchisio has been really, really important in terms of Juventus consistently gelling all the different ages on their team. And oftentimes he kind of went unnoticed, especially the last 4 or 5 years, because they've had such damn good players. But Marchisio has always been a constant, always been a mainstay. So it is kind of sad to see him go, but what a career. And he's obviously going out on great terms. And I know any Juventus fan can only tip their cap to Claudio Marchisio. So that's what I got, David. What about you?
Yeah, I appreciate your historical take. And look, you're right. You know, 25 years at the club, joined when he was 7 years old. There was 1 year he was on loan at Empoli at the pro level. Other than that, was at the club forever. You know, unfortunately, those knee injuries and the one he suffered against Palermo a while back, you know, he just wasn't the same player anymore. I think, too, you know, the thing that stands out to me about Marchisio was the way he would insert himself into the action, his pace. Those are all qualities that, unfortunately, with age and an injury to the knee, you know, tend to become skills that, unfortunately, don't, you're just going to get worse with time. So it was surprising in the sense that Juve, you know, was fairly thin in the midfield. They also had gotten rid of Sturaro, who's going on loan to Sporting once he's healthy. So a pretty thin in the midfield. It looks like Allegri is going to go with the 4-2-3-1 as kind of his base formation, just as a numbers game. But the other thing, too, is this ultimately was a numbers game with Marchisio's decision. He hinted at it on his statement, which I thought was really a very well-crafted statement. But he said that it pained him, but in the end, he had to do what was best for the club, as painful as it was. You know, I took that as a sign that this was a financial decision. We've talked a lot about amortization, gross wages on the podcast this summer. You know, we've explained many times how looking at net spend, incoming, and sales of players is a very flawed way to judge the financial situation of a club. Amortization and gross wages have a lot more to do. Marchisio would have accounted this season and next season $7 million in gross wages alone. His net salary was $3.5 million. So you double that on his book with the taxes. That's what he would have accounted for Juve. Juve basically decided that was too much for third string midfielder. Maybe they waited this long to see how he would look in practices, maybe see if a market developed for him, or maybe even for Marchisio for himself to get to the point where he would accept to unfortunately take a buyout. So Juve saved substantially because of this move. I think they're giving him a substantial golden parachute to leave. But on their financial books, it's going to have a positive impact, especially next season. And, you know, it makes me think, you know, I remember when the Ronaldo deal was happening and, you know, there was a lot of things. And I brought it up myself. I had my doubts that Juve could afford to bring in Ronaldo. And I saw a lot of Juve fans tweeting, look, you know, our job isn't to be accounts. We should believe in the club. If they can figure out a way to afford Ronaldo, that's their job. Our job is to support the team. But then when the prices came in to afford this, and we saw Caldara leave for a profit of $22 million, profit over amortized value, that really helped Juve. And now sacrificing Marchisio, another way to help Juve financially, those moves allowed Juve to keep all of their signature players. So PSG made a late bid for Alexandro. Juve was like, we don't have to sell him. We'll keep him. Same with Pjanic. He had a market on from some pretty big clubs. Now they're going to give him a big raise. So unfortunately, to keep all the players that can help him try to win the Champions League, these were the moves that they had to make. So I know there's been a lot of speculation on what the future holds for Marchisio. Right now, the likeliest destination is in Ligue 1. Both Monaco and PSG appear to be interested. PSG kind of see him as like a Thiago Motta type player, who can be more of a mentor, almost more of an assistant coach. He'd obviously be reunited with Buffon. Monaco had been linked to him a few times for Marchisio, who is from Turin, lives in Turin. That's not a very far move at all, so I could see that happening. The last thing I want to say on Marchisio, I really liked your description of him, Alex, in Italy, there's a lot of great names for roles. You know, a lot of people know about the regista. One of my other favorite words for role is mezzala, which translates to half winger. And that's like a midfielder that plays, you know, behind the winger and in front of the fullback. So it's like a half wing, kind of like how in the NFL we call someone a halfback quarterback. I always liked that term. And I think Marchisio really, in his prime, was the definition of what you'd want out of a mezzala. Someone who's fairly versatile, but also has good pace and can turn into a defender and an attacker on a moment's notice. So Marchisio had a great career at Juve. We wish him the best. But, you know, if you're a Juve fan, unfortunately, this was the price that it cost to keep all these players and add Ronaldo.
Yeah, amen. And definitely a great player and really a likable person from everything I picked up. That Juventus documentary really put Marchisio in another great light. And it's funny, we do this podcast based out of Boston, Massachusetts. And I know a couple people who are New England Revolution fans and like, oh, now I want Claudio Marchisio. And it's like, I like Claudio Marchisio too much to want him to play for a team like the New England Revolution. Marchisio deserves the best. So, David, I'm really excited to bring back this segment to the podcast. We just pretty much had the full weekend of Serie A week one. We do have Atalanta and Frosinone playing today, but pretty much we are ready to bring back winners and losers. So, David, without further ado, who are the winners and losers of episode 146 of the Calciolan podcast?
So shout out to @SparkSeeker_10 who tweeted us a question. Who are the winners and losers of Serie A game week one? He knows this is probably my favorite segment. There was no way we weren't going to bring this back. So for those of you new to the podcast, here we pick the teams, coaches, players who stand out in both good and positive over the Serie A weekend. As you mentioned, Alex, we're recording this before the Atalanta match. The two teams from Genova, Sampdoria, Fiorentina, and Milan-Genoa are rescheduled later on, but we had a decent amount of matches. So let's start on Saturday. We had Juve's win against Chievo. So first off, let's give a shout out to Chievo. I thought that was really a strong performance from them in the debut to Serie A. I think they really gave Ronaldo a real taste of what it's like to play in Italian football. I thought veteran defender Rossettini definitely gave Ronaldo a hard time. Ronaldo didn't score. Let's pivot to Andre Silva. 2 goals in the season at Milan, 3 in La Liga. In his debut, Chievo showed Ronaldo it's a little bit harder in Italy. Then we also had Giaccherini, who scored. Shout out to Thousand Names. Him and I only went 1-2 with our picks, but he said that Giaccherini was going to score, and he nailed the result of Lazio-Napoli, which we'll get to in a second. So Chievo, I thought, did well. Even Sorrentino had a really good match. We send him our best wishes as he's recovering from the injury that happened towards the end of the match. On Juve, winner, of course, Bernardeschi scoring off the bench. Same with Khedira, who had the first goal on Juve. I don't think anyone had picked him as the player to score the first goal of the season, looking at the rest of the firepower on Juve. For another interesting sign, I thought Alessandro played pretty well. You could see him trying to establish the partnership with Cristiano Ronaldo, kind of a little bit how Marcelo had that on Real Madrid. So those are winners and losers for the first match. Then we had Napoli's impressive win against Lazio. I thought in the first half, for the first 35-40 minutes, Napoli looked absolutely dreadful, but they really turned it around. So we want to give credit to them. Our boy Milik, who last season I picked as the future breakout star in Serie A, had 1 goal. He had another one taken away from VAR. We had Insigne with a really brilliant goal. I thought he was Napoli's best player overall, along with Allan, who I can't say enough of what a good midfielder he is. He's kind of Serie A's version of Kante a little bit. He's so good at getting the ball back. And also want to give a shout out to Immobile. I thought that was a fantastic goal. I think too much was made about the Napoli defenders looking bad on that goal. I just thought it was really more Immobile was brilliant on that. So on Saturday, we had the games. There were no early games. It's too hot in Italy to play during the game, but we had the game at 6 p.m. Italy time. We had the first game on ESPN here in the U.S. Torino-Roma. Shout out to our friend Matteo Bonetti. Did a great job. It was really nice to see Serie A in HD. I'm a Comcast subscriber, so never saw it on BN. It looked fantastic. It was a very good match. Of course, Dzeko's goal was absolutely brilliant, reminiscent of Van Basten's goal in the Euro final against Russia. We had the assist from Kluivert, who changed the game coming off the bench. Those are, of course, 2 winners. Also want to give a shout out to a new addition on Torino, midfielder Meite. He was very impressive. I think he came from Monaco in the deal with Barreca. I have to say, I thought Torino looked quite good in that match. They weren't able to score. Olsen was a little bit shaky, but got better with time. So shout out to him as well. But I thought Torino was pretty interesting in that game. And then the next match, of course, Sassuolo's big win against Inter. Really, really impressive performance. We saw manager De Zerbi, another person that we have hyped a lot on the podcast, had done quite well at Benevento. I thought Sassuolo looked great in that match. I really like to see what De Zerbi did. Put Boateng as a false nine. I could see Berardi doing quite well in his 4-3-3. Also want to give a shout out to two midfielders on Sassuolo, who I thought were, had really good games. Former Inter, a youth team product, Duncan, had a really good game. And Sassuolo's captain, Magnanelli, I thought was really terrific. I had him as the man of the match. I'm going to make a bold proclamation on the winners and losers. I don't think Locatelli is going to be playing much at Sassuolo this season. If I had to set the over-under at 18 and a half starts for him this season, I would take the under because I really like these two players. And the last player we want to give a shout-out is defender Magnani, who Juve owns. Played last season on loan at Perugia, made his Serie A debut. He was really excellent, played well on the defense. Someone that I follow who's a writer on Gazzetta dello Sport in Italy, Alex Flaudio, one of the most knowledgeable people on my timeline, is a big Perugia fan, and that's where Magnani played last season. And he was very impressed with him last season. And, of course, did well in the debut. We have talked a lot on the podcast how I know that Juve fans are very upset on Caldara leaving. But when you have a great sporting director like Paratici, he can find these prospects. Juve invested $5 million in Magnani. This is just one game. We don't want to overreact to it. But he could be someone to watch. Maybe he'll turn into the what Juve fans thought would happen with Caldara long term. So a couple of other matches. The race to avoid relegation, never too early to get big wins in this. 3 points count just as much as the beginning of the season as they do towards the end. So we had Spal winning at Bologna, big win for them. Beautiful goal by Kurtic, probably, well, there were a lot of great goals in Serie A, but with Zeko, probably the best of the weekend. Then we also had Empoli who returned to Serie A, beating Cagliari 2-0. Goals by Krunic, who was a midfielder, was linked to quite a few Serie A clubs, and veteran Serie B striker Caputo with another goal. So those are our winners of the weekend. Now let's look at the losers. So I gave myself an attaboy for Milik and De Zerbi. I'm not going to shy away from saying that was one of the worst matches I've seen from Milinkovic-Savic on Saturday against Inter. I really doubt it has anything to do with the transfer rumors or anything like that. That was, though, a disappointing match for him. He really had so many turnovers, had just one brilliant pass the rest of the match. Really not himself. I thought Lazio as a whole looked pretty good in the first 40 minutes. After that, not so much. So let's see when Lucas Vieira comes back. But they are also a loser of the weekend. Another loser, Torino, in the sense that they played well. But after the match, Iago Falque, and the transfer window still open in Spain, was asked about him potentially leaving. And he mentioned how he feels he doesn't get enough respect at Torino. Maybe the fact that they signed Simone Zaza, he saw that as, hey, look at me, I do play well with Belotti. So let's see what happens there. I'm a fan of Iago Falque. He could be a player that leaves. Again, the window is open in other countries. Another loser, losing at home Bologna against Spal. Not a good way to start the season for Bologna. They had an underwhelming transfer window. We don't know how good Pippo Inzaghi is as a manager in Serie A, so definitely not the best start for them. And finally, Inter, definitely reason for concern. We'll get to it a little bit more in the questions. But specifically, I was not impressed by Dalbert at all. He played pretty well during the preseason. Inter needs him to be able to count on him, because if Dalbert can be at least adequate at left wing back, they can use Asamoah in the midfield. I thought Asamoah was pretty much the only maybe really positive note yesterday for Inter. So Dalbert is a loser. Inter as a whole didn't look good. Let's also put as a loser the pitch on the Sassuolo Stadium. I know that was used a little bit as an excuse for Inter, but it wasn't stopping Sassuolo from playing particularly well either. So those are our first winners and losers of the Serie A Week 1. If you have any that we missed, please send them in using in the CalcioLand hashtag.
All right, David, so the next segment we're going to do, since the transfer window, as you said, is now shut for Serie A, let's give out some transfer window grades, and let's start with Juventus.
So this is how I did it on the article for Euro Fantasy League, and I'll paraphrase it and add a little bit to it. So, you know, right away I had some people tweeting me, oh, it's too early to give out grades, we have to see how they do. Well, that's too easy. Hindsight is 2020. Anyone can do that. So the criteria that I used is I looked at what the needs were for each team going into the summer. And I don't think these are too much up for debate. Maybe they are, but I think each team had some shopping lists, some positions of need. And I kind of graded them based on how they did towards that. So for Juve, I think going into the summer, the two key needs were at right back with Lichtsteiner gone, De Sciglio not establishing himself as a starter, Cuadrado, you know, being just an emergency right back, and bringing more quality to the midfield. So to do that, they brought in Cancelo, a little bit shaky defensively, and we saw that on Saturday against Kiev, but has the potential to be quite good, definitely very good offensively already. I have faith that Allegri can teach him defense the way he did with Alexandro and Cuadrado. So I think they filled the need well there. For the midfield, they brought in Emre Can, who has some of the qualities that Juve has been lacking since Vidal. Now, a lot of Juve fans probably expected a little bit more in the midfield, especially with Marchisio gone. But I do think Bonucci's passing ability, and we did see him a couple of pretty good long passes against Chievo, can help overcome that. So when I look at Juve's key needs, I think they did a pretty good job overall filling those. In addition to that, they signed Perin, who, you know, is going to be a very good competition for Szczesny. And I think this is a really good move because it kept Perin away from Roma and Napoli. Now, we talked about on the podcast how Juve got a good price on Perin because there were going to be more deals with Genoa. And then we saw the deal for Favilli as well. So I'm not sure if they would have gotten exactly the same price, but Perin went for a very reasonable transfer fee, and he really would have helped those teams probably more than what they have now. And then, of course, the Ronaldo deal, and we talked about it at the top. I think Juve deserves a ton of credit for bringing in Ronaldo and redeeming Douglas Costa. And let's not forget that. That was over 40 million. And they didn't lose any significant player other than Higuain, who, of course, Ronaldo's going to replace. They essentially paid for those moves by selling some younger players. We've seen Mandragora be sold. We saw Favilli be sold. We saw Caldara be sold. And then, of course, they shed Marchisio's salary. They had also gotten rid of Buffon, Asamoah, and Lichtsteiner's salary. So when I look at Juve, I think they hit their objectives and added arguably the best player in the world or one of the two best players in the world and a devastating winger without selling anyone. So you got to be really impressed with that. I'm going to give them an A minus just because I think the midfield is a little bit thin and they could have done maybe a little bit better there. But overall, you got to feel great about Juve's transfer window if you're a fan of the old lady.
All right, David, absolutely. So the next team, let's go over. It is Napoli.
So as needs going into the season, Napoli finished with 91 points. We talked about it ad nauseum, the most in league history without winning the title. They had a key need at goalkeeper, and I think they would have needed this even if Peperina stayed. But Peperina's contract expired. We knew he was going to Milan since March, so we knew he'd be gone. So that was a clear need. And the other need for Napoli was going to be replacing potential key departures. So, and some people have pointed this out after he tweeted this article. So kudos to them. I do think it's worth mentioning that now you have to give credit to Napoli just for their ability to keep all of their best players, especially Koulibaly, Insigne. Someone like Zielinski had a big market because he's really an intriguing midfielder. So they were able to keep everyone. They replaced Sarri with Ancelotti. Obviously, Ancelotti brings a lot of cachet, a lot of attention to Napoli. He's a great manager. So what they did at the goalkeeper position, though, I'm not that excited. They brought in Meret, who I do like and is a very good keeper, could be a very good keeper down the road, but they spent a lot on him. They spent around 30 million plus bonuses. I think it's around 36 million to sign him. Now, I think Meret could be really good, but how much better if Napoli's goal was like, let's get a young keeper and then eventually sell him to more? I guess he could turn into Alisson down the road. But maybe in the short term, Napoli was still good enough to compete for the title. So just a total hypothetical. Let's say instead of investing so much in Meret, Napoli went to Genoa and say, we'd like to get Pirin and Laxalt. And Laxalt could have really helped while Goulam is out for about the same money. Could that have been a better deal? Probably. But, you know, Meret has the potential to be quite good. Let's see what he does when he gets healthy. Ospina was kind of in Carnesi's. Not sure those are good enough insurance policies, but I still think goalkeeper is a question mark for Napoli. Now, as far as replacing those who left, they obviously lost Jorginho, who's been brilliant at Chelsea so far. But I think Napoli deserves some credit because by selling him to Chelsea for what on paper was an inflated fee, maybe not based on how he's played so far, they also received some compensation for Sarri. They replaced him essentially with Fabian Ruiz. They also have Diarra on the bench. So I still think Napoli, if Fabian Ruiz lives up to the hype, I still think despite losing Jorginho, Napoli could still have one of the best midfields in Serie A. We mentioned Allan. We mentioned Zielinski. They have Diarra, Fabian Ruiz. I mean, that's an end. They still Hamsik. Raj, so their midfield's still really good. So I think, you know, when it comes to replacing people that left, Ancelotti and Fabian Ruiz, when you have Diarra, you could do a lot worse than that. In addition to that, they also added Verdi from Bologna. Last season, we knew Napoli, by the end of the season, Caleoni, Insigne, and Mertens had really run out of gas. Also because Milik was hurt, but Verdi is going to be able, because of his versatility, he can almost basically play all three of those positions. So I had Napoli as a C plus when I graded them on Euro Fantasy. I'm still going to leave it at that. I could almost talk me into a B minus, but I need to see how Meret does. And kudos to the Napoli fans that pointed out we should give them credit for holding on to more of their best players.
Absolutely. And I couldn't help myself. I loved seeing Lorenzo's curler into the top of the net. All right, David, next team we'll give a transfer grade out to is Roma.
So I had as a need for Roma, you know, a team that made it to the semifinals of the Champions League, finished third. They definitely had to get some youth in the midfield. But more importantly for them, the goal was to how would they replace the inevitable painful departures? And we ended up having just two, but really two pretty significant ones. And Alisson, the best keeper in Serie A last season, and Nainggolan, who, you know, I didn't think he was as good last season as in years past, but he definitely was a signature player there. The only other somewhat significant losses were Bruno Perez and De Frel, two players that, quite frankly, didn't live up to expectations since arriving. So Roma replaced Alisson with Olsen. I'm not going to grade him on just one game, but I do give him credit. He was shaky to start the match. It was one of the shakiest clean sheets I had seen in quite a while for the first 70 minutes or so. But then he really went up a notch when it mattered most. So kudos to him. They replaced Nainggolan by bringing in Pastore and Cristante. And I think those two are pretty good replacements because, again, I'm going on the fact that I didn't think Nainggolan was that great the year before. And they really improved at the defensive midfielder position by bringing in Nzonzi. He hasn't played yet. He had barely practiced with the team. So let's see how he does. And, of course, Kluivert, who we mentioned as a winner, who was brilliant in the debut. So I kind of like what Roma's done. We talked a lot about it on the podcast when we have Steve Cerruti from ESPN made a really good point that, look, ultimately finishing fourth or second makes no difference. You still go to the Champions League. Roma's trying to get younger, maybe take a step back so they can take two forwards when Juve's cycle starts coming to an end, if it ever does. So I got to give credit to Roma. I like a lot of what they've done. I don't want to overreact to how Kluivert looked in the first match, but certainly some potential. I think the Nzonzi move, because they really had just De Rossi as a defensive midfielder with Gonalons leaving, really a brilliant signing. I think they needed him more than Malcolm. So it might have turned out pretty well for Roma with what happened with Malcolm in the end.
All right, David, let's try not to overreact over Inter's 1-0 loss, and let's give Inter a transfer window grade.
Yeah, so I'm not going to delve too much into the match since we have a question toward the end of the podcast. So let's go back to what the needs were for Inter going into the summer. They definitely had to improve at the wing back position. They had to improve their qualities up front because they basically had Perisic and Icardi. And then after that, the best they had was Candreva, Eder, and Caramo. Caramo has had his flashes, but, you know, not someone you can really count on. And they had to bring in more depth in the midfield. So how did Inter do? They really improved at the wingback position with Vrchalko and Asamoah. For a variety of reasons, we didn't see either of them play at wingback yesterday. For the quality options up front, they brought in Kita Balde, they brought in Politano, and they brought in Lautaro Martinez. So definitely a lot more quality options up front. If that wasn't enough, they also brought in De Vrij, one of the best center backs in Serie A, on a free transfer to improve depth in the midfield. They brought in Nainggolan, who yesterday was injured. Let's see how that develops. So on paper, they addressed all their needs, and they were able to do that without selling any key players. Inter has done a fantastic job selling a lot of their youth team players for big transfer fees. Those are almost pure profits. They are kind of the masters of that. Juve has kind of taken a step out of their page this summer as well. So look at all the additions. The only two significant players they didn't keep were Cancelo and Rafinha. And also they're good examples because those were players brought in on loan with option to buy. Some of the players that Inter brought in this summer are on loan with option to buy. They're not married to them staying long term. But look at how they did. I think they replaced them pretty well. So let's try not to overreact too much to what we saw. So I'm still going to give them an A- for the summer. I did mention for Roma, I'm going to give them a solid B based on Nzonzi. So who do we have next?
All right, David, next would be Lazio.
So I had Lazio kind of in the same boat as Roma. They're going into the summer as the most important thing to do was replace the inevitable departures. The two big names that left as of now, of course, De Vrij on a free transfer. Look, you know, a lot of people criticize Lazio for not just selling him. I respect the fact that they went all in last season and gambled. They knew there was a good chance they could lose him, but we're like, you know what? We're going to go all out. And until 3 minutes before the season ended, that gamble was about to pay off. So they lost him for free. They also lost Felipe Anderson, but they made a significant profit on him. As a matter of fact, they made such a good profit on Felipe Anderson, who wasn't even a full-time starter last season, that they redid the team with those proceeds. And they brought in Acerbi to replace De Vrij. I thought he looked pretty good on Saturday. Let's see if that's enough. I do think might not be, but they also brought in Badelj on a free transfer. Great move. Could end up being kind of like Lucas Lieva, very underrated Bosman signing. They brought Correa back to Serie A. They brought in Berisha to improve the midfield. And they brought in Durmisi, a left wing back from La Liga. To me, Lazio has done such a good job in the summer. And again, I don't want to overreact to one match. So they've put themselves in a position that they can still sell Milinkovic-Savic. The window's still open in Spain and France. And they would be okay. I don't think they have to necessarily replacement because, again, they brought in Berisha. They brought in Badelj. If you look at Milinkovic-Savic as a midfielder, they have depth there.
Milinkovic-Savic sometimes kind of played as an offensive player right behind Immobile. They have Correa potentially in that role. So that's how good Lazio's transfer window is. They're in a position that they can still sell Milinkovic-Savic. So I'm going to give them an A-, even with the potential of losing one of their best players.
All right, David, last team that we're going to give out a transfer window grade to is Milan.
So I think you have to kind of always look at the context of Milan because of the financial fair play, the ownership situation. So they went into the summer with a need in the midfield for sure. They had to bring in a consistent goal scorer and they had to bring a starting caliber winger. Not surprisingly, those were the three roles that Leonardo pointed out in his introductory press conference. So I think when we grade Milan, what Leonardo and to a lesser extent Maldini did this summer, we have to grade them on a curve in the sense that when they came on board, they had some strict financial fair play parameters to respect. Milan shot their load last summer. Mirabelli and Fassone spent so much that this year Milan had to be really conservative. And despite that, Leonardo was able to bring in Higuain, who I think is Milan's best striker since Ibrahimovic, by a wide margin. They brought in Caldara, who's closer in age to their other defenders. So great moves there. They brought in Bakayoko on loan with option to buy. Look, Bakayoko, it wasn't that long ago, was in the UEFA Champions League team of the season. Definitely struggled at Chelsea, but maybe under Gattuso could fit in quite well. And then for the winger position, they brought in Castillejo from La Liga. They used Bacca as part of the deal. And same with Laxalt, they lose Lapadula as part of the deal. So I thought they were really quite creative. They addressed a lot of needs. I really like that Laxalt deal. You know, we send our best wishes to Strinic, who has a heart issue, has to suspend his playing activity for now. The Laxalt deal now makes even a little bit more sense. But even with a healthy Strinic, I think Laxalt can bring a lot to the table. So I'm going to give Milan a solid B+ when I look at what they did. I guess you could argue they should have done a little bit more in the midfield. But again, with the restrictions that they had with financial fair play, it was really tough. Maybe now that they have Castillejo and even Laxalt, who in some formations, like in a 3-4-3, could play as an offensive left winger, they can use Kalanoglu more in the midfield. He was really excellent for Milan last season, so maybe that's how they overcome the midfield issue. So overall, I think Serie A teams had a really nice window. I'm going to wait for the window to close in Spain and France to recap Serie A as a whole, look at all the players that left and joined the league. But overall, I think the talent levels increased. I think the top teams are better, so that bodes really well for the season. And one thing that always bodes well for the Calcioland podcast is when our listeners send in questions. This week, we didn't get too many. I think with transfers ending, people are kind of easing back into the season. As always, you can send us a question using the Calcioland hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this. After Gonalons to Sevilla was made official today, could we see other Serie A players be sold abroad?
Yeah, I definitely think there are a few more. We mentioned Milinkovic-Savic. I still wouldn't exclude Real Madrid making a late push for him. I know for PSG with financial fair play, it's not that easy, but I wouldn't exclude it altogether. I still, you know, I would say there's a 20-25% chance Milinkovic-Savic is still sold. Granted, he keeps playing like he did on Saturday. There won't be a huge market for him, but he isn't the only one. Off the top of my head, another player that is likely going to be sold is João Mário, really not part of Inter's plans anymore. The window's still open in Spain. I could see him going there, maybe less likely than Liga. And another one to watch is Moise Kean on Juve. I guess you could see some advantages to him practicing with Ronaldo, but you look at how stacked Juve's offense is, he could barely play. You got to wonder if Moise Kean's more valuable to Juve as a sale with a buyback option, similar to Mandragora, make another profit to help the books. going into the season or to loan him out abroad. My guess is Moise Kean is going to move before the window closes. Then we also, in other countries, then we also have two players that are out of a contract, and that's, of course, Marchisio, who we talked about already, and Giuseppe Rossi. Those guys are available to sign as well.
All right, David, the next Twitter question. Are you guys ready? Here it is. Are you guys ready to get off the Inter bandwagon?
So shout out to Juve Loco, who sent us that question, calling out both of us. Kudos to him. Look, you know, we try not to be prisoners of the moment on the podcast, but there's no doubt that was a very disappointing performance against Sassuolo. Rather than using the pitch as an excuse, and this is not even an excuse, I am going to point out a couple of things if you're an Inter fan. Reasons for optimism. Miranda really struggled in that match. You got to think Skriniar and De Vrij will likely start more often than Miranda. So Skriniar, you could tell they really missed him, even in his ability to build from the back. Nainggolan, of course, was in the stands. He was made more of an impression for how he was checking out a female spectator than anything else so far at Inter. I had said that the risk with Nainggolan is he's going to be more popular on Instagram and on Twitter than his performances, but they clearly missed him on the pitch. Let's see what he does. We also had Vršalko not starting at all. We had Perisic coming off the bench in the second half. So once you have Vršalko, Perisic, and Skriniar starting and Nainggolan, that should bring a lot more quality. I also thought Kita Balde was very good when he came off the bench. Like, granted, I'm very partial to him. He's one of my favorite players. I'm a sucker for those guys with the dribbling and the speed and that play with swagger. Just his dribbling ability is really electric, and he showed that a couple of times in the match. So I think I'm not going to get off the Inter bandwagon quite yet. They also historically struggle against Sassuolo. But very interesting match next week, Inter-Torino. Mazzarri lost his first match, I think. I'm not saying he's on the hot seat yet, but he didn't do particularly well last season. So a big match for him against his former team. And Inter, they have to win that game. They can't fall too far behind. So let's see what happens against Torino. But already a match I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, this season, it's a marathon, not a sprint. Sure, as you said, they can't continuously lose. However, if there was any game where they weren't going to look great with all of the new players, wouldn't it be the first game? It absolutely would be. That's what happens when you have such a brand new squad. So no, I am not jumping off that bandwagon just yet. All right, David, next Twitter question. Will Hamsik succeed in the deep role he started in against Lazio?
This is a tough one. I have to be honest. I hate to say it. I think Hamsik is almost done. I think Nainggolan might have a little bit more left than Hamsik, but I kind of look at him and Hamsik as two players that are kind of such big brand names for good reasons. They were amongst the elite midfielders in Serie A for so long that I wonder if their reputation is just so much better than their performances. I got to say, if I was Ancelotti, and I know it's very hard to bench Hamsik, but I really would go with Diarra a lot more in that deep-lying playmaker midfield. I'm not sure if Fabian Ruiz can play there, but long and short of it, when I look at Napoli's midfield, I want to see Allan, I want to see Fabian Ruiz, I want to see Zielinski, I want to see Diarra, I want to see all four of those players more than I want to see Hamsik. It wasn't surprising that Napoli was open to selling Hamsik to a Chinese club as long as they came with a big offer. I think Napoli was doing that. I mean, look, De Laurentiis loves money, as would any president, but he's always sensitive to that. I also think with a big offer, it would have been easy to sell it to the fans why they were moving on. So to answer the question, I don't think he'll succeed in the deep playmaker role. I'm not sure he can succeed, in any role in the midfield. It wouldn't surprise me kind of like last season if he has a stretch of games where he does well overall. But for the most part, I see him as a potential liability for Napoli more than anything else.
All right, David, last question. Let's move away from football. How did you get into journalism? I love writing about football, but not sure it's the right career path for me.
Great question. So first of all, I'll tell you this. Anytime someone refers to me as a journalist, I get really uncomfortable because I don't really see myself as that. And I know that we talk about journalism on the podcast, but it's really more about writing and things like that. It's just a very broad definition. I guess when I think of a journalist, I think a lot more of like a reporter, someone that reports on news. So of course, someone like Di Marzio, someone like Fabrizio Romano, guys that report on things, I definitely don't do that. I mean, I do it so rarely that I don't even want to bring it up. It's like once or twice a year. So I'm not a reporter. I just work with great reporters. I always knew it would give me a really big platform for my other work to work with people of that caliber. So I kind of see myself more as, you know, host of this podcast. I give my opinions. I like writing out the podcast. I like writing articles. So, you know, there's a distinction between a columnist and a reporter. I see myself a lot more as a columnist, like giving opinions, than anything else. But aside from that, you know, how did that I get into it? And it's interesting that the question is, you know, I love writing about football, but I'm not sure if it's the right career path for me. Like, I never chose it as a career path. Like, we're recording this podcast. I'm in my office here in Boston. During the day, I work in finance. I have started all the football stuff as kind of like a passion hobby. I remember I used to write on message boards on Serie A, and I kind of got a knack for it. I was like, I really enjoy looking at things. Like, one thing that's really helped me in all my writing is having debates with people either on message boards or on Twitter. Some of my best columns have basically each paragraph was a response to someone's tweet. I've written a lot of articles that way. And I kind of decided, let me see if I can make something out of that. And, you know, slowly but surely, I built a pretty decent base. You know, I started writing more and more. What became, instead of a hobby, kind of like a second job, but I really just do it for passion. So my advice to anyone listening who wants to get into writing, you know, I have sometimes people emailing me. I mean, the best thing that I can tell you is just do it. Nowadays with Twitter, YouTube, videos, things like that, like there's so many ways to platforms for you to get your message out. I always say start with what you know. You know, I started writing about Serie A. I started writing about teams that I knew a lot about. Then I started writing about transfers, and I learned more, started covering transfers in different leagues. So start with what you know, and then go from there, see where it takes you. So, Alex, I mean, you've been really coming along with your videos. I think you're kind of doing something similar. You're talking about things that you like. Look at how much growth you have. Tell me a little bit about how that's going and how you decided to get into it. Did you ever expect that it would get this viral, by the way?
No, not at all. And I've told so many people that actually it was about 3 months ago yesterday that I think I put out the first video. And David, I thought nothing of it. I was getting carpal tunnel from tweeting too much. And this player, Jean-Michel Seri from Nice, was rumored to come to Chelsea. And I wanted to explain why I didn't want the move. But as I said, my hand was getting tired. So I thought nothing of it. I was home alone. I decided to shoot a quick video. And I got lucky. People really decided that they liked hearing my thoughts. So even though I thought nothing of it, it was still something I was passionate about. So I kept doing it. I made sure to always make it natural. And I was flattered by requests, but I always wanted to do it when I felt comfortable doing it. And it turned out to be pretty successful for me. So, you know, I can echo what you said. And it's just really important you do what you want to do. And at any moment, one article or one blog or one tweet or one video could be heard by the right person and it could really take off. So I know it sounds cliche, but you just got to keep believing that what you're doing is worth it, especially if you love it.
Very, very well said. Okay, so this is our first episode of the week. Thanks everyone who sent in questions. As always, I want to thank our listeners. You guys are co-writers of the show with your fantastic questions. We have a new show Thursday. Send them in with the CalcioLand hashtag. You guys are also our marketing department. I can't thank enough those who tweet about our podcast to let your followers know what we do. That really helps us. And also, please leave us reviews and subscribe If you're listening to us on your iPhone, please leave us a 5-star review. It only takes 2 seconds. We are close to 300 reviews in North America alone. That helps the podcast a ton. So thank you so much for your support, and we look forward to chatting with you on Thursday.